The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
Welcome to episode 25 of Chat with a Cat. This is actually a real chat. We're going to have a special guest co-host along with us today. I'd say everyone say welcome to the JNR, but you can't really see him, so say it into your headphones. Welcome, and we're glad to have you here, the GM of the Clippers.
All right, thanks for having me. This is nice. I've always talked about how I love to do the podcast. I did it with Josh, the garbage man, the Bulls GM, so many times for years. I'm not sure if you had left at that point, but we did like the live podcasts called Horns and Fangs. And that was one of the things that really kept me excited about Sim League far longer after I should have stopped being excited about it. So podcasting is definitely the way to keep my excitement. So I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, good to hear. Yeah, I remember probably the first five or six of those, and then things shifted in my life, and I had to step away from Sim League. It's good to be back from my perspective too. We'll keep going as long as I can because This kind of stuff. This is neither here nor there, but I actually found the book on Amazon that got me started with statistical analysis of basketball back when I was in junior high, and it covers the 1988-89 NBA season. And I gave it to my daughter to read just for the statistical concepts because she played basketball in high school. And she's like, this is really good, but I don't know any of these players. And it's like, you know, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Larry Bird. I'm like, I have failed as a father.
So I have something similar. Is like, there's like this kid's book. Not to do with stats or anything, but we have just this kid's book that's like B is for basketball. And before my son was born, I was like, this is 6 years ago. I was like, this is going to be amazing. I'm going to buy this book and I'm going to read it to him every night. And he's going to become obsessed with basketball. And I've probably read that book to both of my kids combined, maybe three times in their lives. And no one is interested. And it makes me very sad.
Yeah, my oldest son, from the time he was about a year old, we had a little basketball hoop in the house, and he would shoot at that thing all day. We later found out he was autistic, and that was one of his things. Mm-hmm. When he got into high school, he played on the Frosh team, was end of the bench because the coach was one of those guys that played his five starters for the entire game, and nobody else ever got in. And even when he was in for like 10 seconds, he'd like come in and he'd hit a three-pointer every single game. And so I was like, dude, could you play him a little more? Because the other guy doesn't score.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's I'm not looking forward to it.
Issues with her coach. Yeah, she was completely ridiculous. Every other coach in the league wanted her, but she was just like, you know what? I'm not having fun. I'm done. So she went into track and field instead. And, I always told her, basketball, sports in general, is fun, unless you're playing one of the big three in male sports where you can make money, because I don't want you to go to the WNBA and make $50,000 a year.
No. Yeah, that is not this. That is not.
That is not a good career path.
No. We just started basketball with my oldest, and he's like, he likes it, but like, I did say this in the chat, but I'll say it out loud too, is that I was dropping him off basketball camp and I was like, remember the most important rule. And I wanted him to say like, listen to your coach. And he said, always pass, never shoot. I was like, well, no, I'd like you to shoot. You should shoot the ball. Please shoot.
Yeah. See, I taught both of my kids, you probably will not be the most athletically gifted person on the court. So your job is to outthink opposing players. And I told them the story of when I was playing basketball in high school. Our varsity coach came into the JV practice. I was on the JV team, and he said, any of you guys that think you can run with the varsity, come out after practice, the varsity practice. I was like, I can't shoot with the varsity. I can't rebound with the varsity, but I will run through a wall. So I'm going to show up. I was the only one that showed up. And one of the drills that they had us do was they put a basketball at the center of the free throw circle, had four people, around the circle on the key, and then four people outside of them. And on the whistle, the goal was for the four guys inside the circle to make sure the guys outside the circle didn't get the ball for 15 seconds. So basically a box out drill. And so they blew the whistle, and as soon as the whistle blew, I dropped to the ground, squirted between the guy's legs, and had my arms around the ball in about half a second. And so they had to run lines because I didn't want to run lines. And so they put me in the
Damn it.
middle, and they said, "All right, now you're going to keep them, make sure they don't get the ball for 15 seconds." And so I, wrestled and kept them away for about 10 seconds. And when one guy lunged for the ball, I picked up the ball and threw it to the other end of the court. And they looked at me, "What was that for? You said he wasn't supposed to get the ball for 15 seconds. He
Tom,
hasn't got the ball. It's been 15
that's
seconds." And at that point, the coaches knew I wasn't going to win on athletic ability, but I was going to find a way to outthink everybody.
exactly. No, that's stuff I care about more, the kids too. But they won't be NBA players. It's okay.
Now, my dream growing up was always to be 7 feet tall and sit on an NBA bench, because then I wouldn't actually have to be good. I'd just have to be tall, and I'd have a nice seat for all the games. But I didn't make 7 feet tall, so that dream went out the window.
Alas.
All right, so we don't have a formal structure for what we're going to talk about today, but let's go ahead and start with some of the stuff that I know you've prepared. You wanted to kind of do a look across the league and talk about trends. So I'm going to turn the floor over to you, and I'm just going to react off you if that's okay.
Absolutely, yeah. So I was looking around the teams the past couple of days, and there's the trends are not necessarily anything that's like really groundbreaking stuff, and it's kind of stuff that makes sense if you like understand the game a little bit and if you understand the historical context. But there are certain positions that are very hard to come by right now. And basically what you'll see is a lot of people are having the same problem and they're all looking for a solution, but the solution is only on maybe three or four teams. And so I was doing some analysis, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. This isn't the full thing, but I looked at every player who had a purple potential,
So basically, you
and
looked at the Spurs.
I looked at the Spurs. I looked at the Spurs and then a few others. And what I pretty much found, and this makes sense if you understand like how players get purple, but there are two centers, and I'm counting Moses as a center and not listed as power forward. He's a center. There are 3 point guards, but really there's only 2 point guards because Magic Johnson is listed as power forward, but he is a point guard. And Reggie Theus is listed as a point guard, and he's not a point guard. He's a shooting guard who, he was listed as that in the creation draft. None of the positions really matter, but for the context of this, it does. So there's 2 point guards, there's two centers, and the other 10 are all wings, right? And that's just what happens because your stats are distributed across, and so if you're more likely to have like an A in perimeter defense and steals, or maybe a B in offensive rebounding, where and so you will see more wings, but what is really happening, like even when you go deeper than that, right? Because there's more than just purple potential talent, is that there just isn't a ton of like readily available power forwards who can fit into a team. And what most people are doing is moving players who have similar skill sets to move, because it's just like a league full of wings that are being slotted into different positions. And that is just like across the entire league. There's so many people who are out of position, or like not even out of position, but more being used in a way that they weren't used in their real careers, or that makes more sense for this build. And it's just very interesting to me to just find like what positions suffer because of that, what positions become premiums because of that, and how people build their teams. Obviously I've been struggling with it with finding a good power forward for since we started, because because by the time it was my time in the creation draft, there's like George McGinnis was the closest available. It's like, all right, well, that's gonna last me a year, and it did. But yeah, so that's kind of what I found is like the versatility of players and the creativity of GMs is trying to overcome the lack of like strict established power forwards. I have also noticed that most of this talent that's coming in is not was not creation draft, right? This is the boom of the 80s that we are like fully in. And
Yes,
like
absolutely.
half of the time, the rookie of the year was on an all NBA team in our season so far, right? And the other two times, I don't understand why they weren't. Right, like when Ralph Sampson did not make the PBSL team despite what 29 points a game, and I think the other one was it Aguirre? There was one of them who like was scoring 27
Probably
points.
Aguirre, because
It
I'm
was
pretty sure
Aguirre.
Drexler did, and I'm pretty sure Buck Williams did.
The one that I was thinking of was actually was it Joe Barry Carroll was
I
yeah
think that
was.
was creation draft.
Oh, so yeah, I guess he was a creation draft. You're right, but he was rookie of the year. Would that
Yes.
wait? Oh, that's a question. Would everyone be eligible for that, or was that just like who was the
It
zero
was just
year?
true rookies, because if you look at the team pages and you look at their league years of experience or their league years of service, it goes
Yeah.
back to pre-1980. That's why you had different max levels in this latest
Okay. Yeah.
round of free agency. And I'll use players that everybody knows, Magic was a rookie when we started, so he had a 25% max. But Moses was, I think, in his ninth year, so he had a 30% max. And I think Robert Parrish had a 35% max because he's ancient already.
Yeah. But it was Terry Cummings was first team and rookie of the year.
Cummings, yeah, not Aguirre, yeah.
Yeah. So but yeah, like the talent is like immediately coming in and making an impact. And like
Yeah, and that's different if you were in the old PBSL, where generally rookies took 2, 3, 4 years to find their footing.
No, it's I remember like I would do this thing sometimes where I'd go back at my rosters, right? And I remembered my team's inflection points when the Timberwolves were drafting Weber and Hill, but I don't care, like really drafting Weber, then drafting Bosch, then drafting Wiggins were my three like eras of like I was good, can't be good anymore. Immediately get another star in the draft because I'm very lucky. I would notice every time when I was looking through the records was that the first 2 years after that draft, like 92, 93, it's like still not great. And then the wins started. Bosch, same thing. 2003 and 2004, I was like down to 35 wins. And then suddenly I'm at 55 wins. And so, like, it was taking a little bit of time. But, like, and Bosch was probably averaging like 19 in his rookie year or whatever. But now people are just coming in. Like, Ralph Sampson is like, I don't know, Terry Cummings was 30 points a game, 31 points a game or something. Like, it's
Yeah.
ridiculous.
I think part of it too is the pace of the league in the 80s was way higher than the 90s, which is when we started the PBSL. And the game does account for historical pace. So if you were to take these players with stats as is and, roll the clock forward into the 90s, everybody probably takes a 10 to 20% dip in all their stats just because the game slows down. The other thing that I think of that does kind of mirror real life is if you look at most of these players when they were coming into the league in the 80s, they were juniors and seniors in college. They were basically fully finished products. You go in the late 90s, starting with, Kevin Garnett and Kobe Bryant and that group, and they're coming out of high school or, they're one and dones, and they're just not polished yet. It takes time for them to grow into themselves. So in some ways, that's realistic, I think.
Yeah, and that does make sense because where like Michael Jordan comes in as a purple, but there's a lot of guys coming in as a blue purple or a green blue. And I remember Bosch was green blue, but he was kind of special, like in that way, like not ever most by the time 2003, 2004 runs around, and we look at those files, you'll see a lot of yellow blues in this at the top, right? Like they're yellow current, and that would mean that they would take a couple of years to get going. Now, something that just popped in my head, I don't know how this will change. Scott used to edit draft files, and so we're gonna see what happens to the draft files
When Scott's not editing
when
them.
Scott's not editing them. So I'm actually excited for that.
And that's, I kind of threw this in the Discord, I think, last Friday, kind of a list of when everything happened and when is the league going to catch up with real life. And I think it gets to the point, and I said, in 2015, I believe, is the last season in the database that it has rookie files. And you can create rookie files, and the way that the rookie files are generated currently is basically FastBreak has a historical database of player stats. And so if you're wanting to create your own rookie draft files, what you can do is you can take a player and you put in his year-by-year stats. And his current ratings when he enters will be based on his rookie year stats. And his potentials will be based on whatever year happens to give him the highest potential. And so that's presumably how it's currently generating, is looking at their stats. And I mentioned in that post, there's a window from about 2015, 2016 through about 2025, when maybe it's through about 2020, now that I think about it. Yeah, I think it's about 2020. So we'll have a few years, maybe a decade's worth, where we'll have 7, 8, 9 years of stats. And then we'll have, 4 years of stats and 2 years of stats, and then we're guessing. And those of us that were in the old league remember Anthony Davis and what a monster he was. But, part of that, I think, was A, wishful thinking on Scott's part, but B, he was only in the league for 2 or 3 years. You had to guess what his potential was.
So you're just putting in whatever. I guess that's the point now, is like I would like to see. I'm not volunteering for this, like set in stone. I would like to see the method of creating these things, because if it's not too labor intensive, and I have a feeling it might be, but if it's not too labor intensive, I might not mind. Like, because 2014 is the last. I remember that was the last draft class, right? That was Wiggins, Jokic, and I remember 2015 is when we're like, okay, we're gonna change it. We're gonna do college. I guess we did it in the years before the
Yeah, we
college.
use college imports, and those players are different. They're weird.
Yeah, they were. I'll say it. They were busted. It was busted. It was a busted college foul, and like there was no fixing it once it was done that way, whatever way it was, where then the point guard just disappeared entirely. But I would like to at least look and see how realistic it is to create a 2018 draft class, 2016, 2017, or something.
Yeah, I would suggest anyone that wants to volunteer to do that, start now.
I may as well like look into the process, because that it seems interesting, and I would like to. I remember several GMs. That was when the interest really just kind of fell off a cliff. Was like the because like the idea of renaming players to like whoever is cool, but then we're in 2055 and there's a Jose Alvarado. It's not. It just doesn't feel real.
Yeah.
And then the people who put in like Jeff Van Gundy and Stan Van Gundy. And then someone did professional wrestlers, like their real names. There was like a Bill Brooks for CM Punk, and I was just like that got me all the way out of it. I was
Yeah,
not.
not to yuck somebody else's yum. I know some people love that and some people think it's hilarious, but I'm with you. I think you either need to go full fiction from the start and let the names be randomly generated. I don't want to see, I don't want to see real people's names unless it's an accident of random number generation, or commit to full NBA rosters. And, I think I could be remembering wrong. I'd have to go look up the screenshot. I think we could get to about 53 seasons before we caught up. I think we probably want to consider how do we reset the league around season 40. Because you want to consider around season 40, so you have a plan by season 50. Because one, if we can get to season 53, because that's when real time catches up with us again, we're already at the point where we're having to guess at potentials. So, it's not something that needs to be addressed urgently, but I think if we had in mind from the beginning, and I haven't fleshed out a specific suggestion for this, but in my head, my suggestion would be something like, let's say we say we're going to end the league in, 2025, because the season 2025, obviously that takes us to 2032 in the real world. You lock draft picks for 2026 and 2027, can't trade those. And when we reach the end of the 2025 season, so that would be your 2026 draft pick, however you finished that season is your order in the new creation draft.
See, I like that idea. I mean,
Because it gives you some incentive to win at the end. It doesn't let you sell off a future that no longer exists. And it makes how you finish meaningful for how the next one starts. So there's still some incentive to do something.
I think that would keep people interested for sure. Obviously, that's down the
That's
road,
way down the road, but yeah.
but I don't think we were as good. Like, we talked about it, but it felt much more like most people just didn't have an idea, like concrete idea of what it was going to look like. And now a lot
Right.
of us have seen it.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I think eventually it'd be good to talk about. I will at some point take a look at editing the rosters and see what a pain in the ass it is, if it is. I mean, I guess
Yeah, as
I
a
could just buy the game and do it like on my own and look, right? Because if I create a class, I could just export that file and like.
You can create a class and export the file. The only thing that we wouldn't have with the, historicity is because the game knows what the average pace and the average 3-point rate and what is. It would be kind of guessing after 2015, or it probably just locks at the 2015 levels. I haven't looked and tested to be sure, but again, that's for the last 10 seasons of the league at most, so it's fine because everybody we've adjusted and we're used to it by then. But I think it's good to be thinking about things now, because we know NBA players are a finite resource and we're going to run out at some point.
Exactly. I will say this, if I do it and make these, I don't know if Scott was getting points for these. I'm going to make sure that someone pays me points for doing these. I need points.
If now I don't recall if you can do like imports of common to limited files and pull in year by year stats that way, or if you have to do it through the input editor where you're having to tab type in games, tab type in minutes, tab if it's the second one. Yes, whoever gets that needs to be sainted in addition to getting points.
Right, exactly.
Or
I'm kind of
alternatively,
surprised.
if you wanted to cheat the process a little bit, and everybody agreed with this, instead of trying to put in every year of a player's career, maybe you just go to basketballreference.com and we agree you put in his rookie stats and you put in whatever year was his highest PER, and that's considered his peak. And that would probably reduce the work 5 to 10-fold.
That is a good point. That makes sense.
Yeah, just when I'm trying to figure out how on earth would I do that, because if you're trying to do and let's be honest, there's probably 30 to 40 significant players in each draft class, and you can let the computer just auto-generate the rest as red reds. But 40 players per draft class times trying to do this for 15 seasons, times trying to put in 15 seasons per player is 4,500 seasons worth of data. You don't want to do that.
No, that doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Like the idea, basically, this is all for me to be like, I want a realistic Luka in the league, and a realistic, a realistic Trae Young, and those sort of things. Like when that cutoff happened, it just was like, I just want to see how it would work. I want to see how far we could go with that.
Yeah, I think one of the other things for me, and this is my own, personal preference, and I know it's never going to fly, so I'm not going to officially suggest it at any point, but I would love to turn off or disable or otherwise get rid of the draft preview with the order, because under the current system, you're never going to have a Nikola Jokic who slips to the middle of the second round. You're never going to have because also everybody knows Nikola Jokic, and they're going to go grab him at three or four or whatever.
Or one in what we
Yeah,
did in
and
PBSL.
that's the problem I have with real players, and one of the reasons I like fictional players is nobody knows who's going to be good, and so you can get steals in the draft. Here, it's I kind of did a review of it. It's very, very rare that we see somebody fall in the draft. And usually when a player breaks out, it's because TC boosted him two or three times in a row. It's not because somebody goofed on the draft.
And that has to, I mean, that's so random that it can't be anything that anyone counts on. Like you
Right.
can't, like I'm gonna grab this guy and think he's gonna get boosted with the combination of training or whatever. Like you just have to be lucky. Like when I drafted Theus in the creation draft, he wasn't a rookie. I think he was a 1 year player. Or no, he had 2 years of experience. But when I drafted him, he was, good. He wasn't, I don't, he didn't have purple potential, and he was like, a generally good shooting guard who probably could pass the ball if need, if needed. And then like just a random ass boost made him like have purple potential, but like mostly all the different like ratings just bumped, right? But you just can't count on that. That's not what I was thinking
Yeah,
about when I drafted him.
not only can you can't count it, sometimes it's frustrating when it happens. I complain good-naturedly. I'm not really complaining, but doing it for the shtick. I traded away Bernard King after my first season, and then he got a TC boost, and then he got another TC boost, and I traded away James Donaldson, and he got a TC boost. I'm
TC
like,
boost.
yeah, you want to get a TC boost? Trade a player from me, and that player's going to get a TC boost.
Yeah, I
It's
mean that I
the
think that
Leaving
happened
Portland
with
effect. They get off the blunt force trauma.
I think that happened with me a couple of times where like I had a TC boost after acquiring that player. Like I don't know, I think Higgins may have gotten a boost. I can't remember. But yeah, I mean, that's luck, and that doesn't, I
Yeah,
don't
and
know.
I think, it's what keeps the game interesting. I think honestly is luck, and it's kind of game theory that you have with all games. You need to have a mix of skill, and I think the skill involved here is fitting rosters together. It's anticipating what, supply and demand is on the trade market and in free agency, and then there's luck involved in injuries. There's luck involved in training camp boosts. There's luck involved in the actual games because there's randomness. You could sim a game 100 times and you win 99 of them, but then when they actually run the one that counts, you lose. It's random. And if it wasn't, the game would get very boring very quickly because the same three people would go 82 and 0 every year and meet each other in the conference finals and playoffs.
And that, well, I mean, yeah, and that's from what I heard, that sort of thing happened towards the end when Doug stole Scott's Pistons team. I think that's the way that we should say that, rather than Doug retired as the Bucks so he could take the overpowered Pistons team that Scott had built and then
I've heard about
benefited
this, but I
from that
didn't witness
work.
it, so I was listening to you regale the story.
It's because it's Doug, so it's fun to do. Like the best part about this league, and what I really like about some of the guys who have come like after, is that from what I understand, right, is that like Dave from the Sonics, who's the commish and is friends with a couple of these other guys, the Nuggets GM, the Pistons GM, like they know each other and they're friends, and like so they fuck with each other, and that's wonderful, right? Like
It's one of the things that I really think has been great about the league from the beginning is I think in the beginning, it grew out of Pelicans report, and it was mostly a way for a group of friends to have an excuse to talk to each other as
what
life starts pulling you apart. And I've been grateful to be welcomed into the brotherhood, as it were,
Absolutely.
even though I'm not in New Orleans.
Yeah, well, as long as you can deal with them talking shit about the Lakers every once in a while, it's fine.
Oh yeah,
Like, yeah.
I get
But
it. I mean, I always joke. I have just as valid a reason for liking Lakers as anybody else, and everybody's like, "Oh, it's from because you're from LA," or "Oh, because you're a bandwagon fan." I'm like, I actually started following the Lakers the year after Magic retired with HIV when they sucked. And the reason I picked the Lakers, and this will sound stupid, but everybody's reason for liking a team is
Yeah,
stupid,
of course.
is because at the time they were the only team that wore non-white jerseys at home. They had yellow, and I thought that was different and cool.
That it is different. The jerseys are cool. You'll never hear me saying anything bad about that. But like, so the thing about the Pelicans report is that, like, as far as I know, like, I knew Chad. I was friends with Chad before, but the rest of us, like, so Doug and Scott and Trey knew each other, and that was it. Like, they knew each other, and then me and Doug, we didn't, none of us knew each other, until, like, I think until we moved over to the PBSL. I don't think, because, like, it's possible.
I think you
I
probably knew of each other through Pelicans report, but you
yeah,
didn't
we
know
knew of
them
each
each other.
other. And I'm trying to remember one random night, Chad and I were hosting karaoke, and Doug came in. And I can't remember if it was Pelicans report or PBSL, but that was the first time that we met someone that we didn't already know. And now at this point, you know, I went to Doug's wedding. You know, we're all pals. But like, that sort of familiarity is like what makes this so much fun, because God, it is so much fun to rag on these people. And Ed and Carlos, same thing. They work together, so they knew each other, and they fuck with each other and everyone else together. And so that's what makes the league so fun. And so it's awesome to see these other guys who, like, they're like, I already have these people I'm familiar with. And then Charlie was the same way, that Charlie had his connections that he brought in, and everyone knows each other. They know each other. I tried it a few times, but I, besides Chad, which is a good or bad, depending on how you feel about him. But besides that, and then Josh, who I brought in, like, most of the, I brought in a lot of people who did not stick around, like maybe one season, two seasons. I don't know if you remember the Cavs, there was a team called Higher Norm. There was a GM. It was a friend of mine. It was like three or four friends who wanted to run it together. And his name was, when there was a guy named Norman. And so, like, Higher Norm was a group of four people who were running the Cavs, but they all lost interest very quickly.
I think I remember Higher Norm. I did not realize it was a four-person collective, but I guess on the internet, nobody knows you're a
Yeah,
dog.
exactly. Well, yeah. And that, at the Pelicans report, there was a guy who had a team, and his brother had a team, and he was trading, his brother was trading all of his good players to him. And they found the same IP address, and it was like, yeah, it's my brother. It's like, I mean, yes, that would, those, they would share the same IP address. It was probably not a brother. It was probably, you know.
Yeah, come on, dude.
Yeah.
All right, this seems like as good a time as any to take a quick break and run some of my stupid commercials. And so we'll be back in a moment.
Guys, can I put on makeup and talk about boys with you?
Ew!
Rush me out the door.
All the kids used to be mean to me at school because I eat paste and wet my chair. But now I've got a My Little Doppelganger doll, and everybody loves me.
You're all gonna grow up to be drunken whores, so shove it where the sun don't shine, or I'll poison your lip gloss.
I'm just kidding.
Come do my hair.
It's also good for my dumb brother. Hey, Biff, Mommy said I could go to the mall with you.
Who told you to take your head out of the toilet, you little freak?
You wear girls' underwear and rub your wee-wee.
Saddle up, Tex. We're going shopping. Yeah.
And it works really great on grown-ups.
Cindy, turn off the TV and go to bed.
I'll go to bed when I'm good and ready, you pathetic nobody.
Oh, I guess a few more minutes won't hurt.
My little doppelganger is my best friend.
Mwah. Keep your gross lips off me and do something about that canker sore, would ya?
My Little Doppelganger, also available, My Little Split Personality and My Little Addiction.
This week on Zenora, Queen of Battle, a journey is undertaken.
Come up here, Janelle. You can ride in front of me.
Hold me tight!
But they must make haste.
We'll have to gallop.
Oh, yes!
All on the next Zenora.
Welcome back to Chat with a Cat and the JNR. special guest host this this pod. So we're now going to just kind of take a look around the league in general. There were a ton of trades. There were some unexpected happenings in free agency. I think, and
there
I
was one unexpected happening. Just one unexpected happening in free agency.
Yeah, just a little bit. And I think I mentioned on the pod, there wasn't a ton of interesting stuff with the draft, in my opinion, with the possible exception of Chad trading out to go big game hunting. But everybody pretty much stayed where they were at in the draft. Everybody pretty much drafted who you thought they were going to draft. So, you know, it was probably exciting to be the one doing the drafting, but if you're watching the draft and trying to react to it, it's pretty boring. So we're going to talk about how the league has shifted post-free agency and post-trade. So I have a few things, but let's start with the big trade that nobody saw coming, or the big free agency signing that nobody saw coming. There was a big trade that I didn't see coming either.
No.
Let's start with free agency. Why don't you go ahead and hit us with that one?
Yeah, you know, we really did. We really needed the West to get stronger. That's what we needed. We needed more talent to come to the West. I swear, so like, Pelicans report, I was the Heat, and there was only like maybe seven seasons. But once I got to this league, it was Timberwolves and Clippers, and it's just the West. And the West has always been good. The West has always, like, you used to be in the East.
I miss being the Hawks.
Yeah. You used to be the Hawks in the East. And you know, I mean, your teams were always good, but you had a, you didn't have as much of a grueling way to the finals, right?
No.
Like a few years would be, like the Raptors would be good or whatever, but like for the most
this
part,
this has been grueling first four seasons. I'm just glad Moses is out of here.
Yeah, Moses is gone, which is nice. But it's actually surprising to me that we're at what is it half? It's half and half so far with the 2 years. Is that we have two West winners and two East winners.
Yeah.
Because the West is just insane. It's brutal. Like, and almost every single team is like, I am going for it. There's a couple that aren't. But for the most part, everyone is going for it. And
yeah,
everyone is really talented.
I look down the standings. I don't think the Mavericks are going for it now, but they're certainly accumulating pieces. I think the Nuggets aren't going for it now because they just came off breaking up their team, but they're accumulating pieces. The Rockets probably think they're going for it. I'm not convinced. Kings are going for it. Spurs are going for it. Jazz are not. Warriors decided to blow up the Twin Towers. That one shocked me. I was kind of happy that, okay, finally I don't have to deal with these two anymore.
But I still think he's going for it. I think he's just going for it in a different way. I don't think he's like giving up because of like the return got him another good player. And,
right.
You know.
Yeah. Clippers are going for it. Lakers are going for it. Sonics are going for it. Suns are not. Trailblazers are going for it. So basically, the Jazz and the Suns have given up. I think the Rockets, Nuggets, and Mavericks aren't ready yet. Warriors, I don't personally think are ready yet, but not that they're giving up. They're not going to sell off pieces. And then everybody else is, let's do it.
Yeah, it's
going to be another bloodbath.
It is going to be another bloodbath. And, like, I kind of, like, decided to do it just because I wasn't. Like, basically, I made the Walter Davis trade and then was like, well, let's keep trying to be good even though it didn't work out because, you know, I figured a lot of people would be trying to sell for 84 and 85 and going so on. But it doesn't feel like it. If they are, they're not in this conference. And so, like, you know, part of me is wondering why I decided to join the bloodbath, but at the same time, you know, when you have a player who can be a top 10 to top 15 player, you should at least try.
Don't tell Chad that.
I mean, listen. So I know for a fact, and he might disagree or whatever, do his thing, but like I know for a fact that the Reggie Theus is overrated thing came from our discussions about Tyrese Halliburton.
Oh,
like
yeah,
it's 100
absolutely.
Right, it's just him being like, I am mad. Well, he's not mad, but he's like, you disagree with me on this player, so I am going to take the archetype of this player and throw it at your player.
And that comes back to what we were talking about before, where everybody's messing with each other and everybody's in on the joke.
And exactly. And that's the thing. Never, I did not read that article and like furrow my brow and get, I can't believe it. I laughed my ass off and I thought it was amazing. And I will continue to do the, hey, all league second team doesn't seem very overrated to me. Like,
overrated.
Yeah. Oh God. Oh man, we need those back. That was such a good podcast.
Yes, I wish I could find those sound drops.
Properly rated.
I mean, I look at the East and I'm like, you know, the Celtics are building now, but they tore everything down to the studs. And I don't think Olajuwon and Sampson are enough to win the title. I think it probably carries into the playoffs, but they're not deep enough to go deep. I think the Nets are trying to win now. The Knicks are trying to win now. I don't know what the 76ers are doing. The Bullets are trying to win now. I think the Hawks are trying to win now. I just don't know if they have enough bullets in the chamber.
The Hawks are trying to win now.
Cavs, Pacers, Pistons. I think they're trying, but I don't. You know, nobody is as monstrous as the Bucks, and that's the problem with being in that division. Is you're chasing the Bucks.
Yep. Yeah. There's not a lot. I mean, but the thing is, like, the talent is there across those three teams you just mentioned. Like, the Pistons have a pretty talented team.
Yeah, I like the talent. I just don't like the fit, if that makes sense.
It does. There's a lot there. Like, but it kind of goes back to what I was like. Most teams are missing something, and a lot of teams are missing the same thing.
Yes.
Whereas they're one of the teams that like has a star power forward. They don't need to worry about that. But they're one of the ones who just like needs a really good point guard. And like, I just don't think.
Maybe they should talk to the Lakers.
Yeah. Right. Right. Like, and so
which
like
is another one of the running jokes, right?
Yeah. Cause everyone has really good and talented wings, but like eventually, because if everyone has it, you need other things to stand out.
Yeah. If everyone's special, no one is special.
That's right.
I watched my Incredibles.
Sorry, Chad, we're doing some real-time trade talk.
We have breaking trade news on Chat with Cap?
Chad and I are not trading. We're talking about, you know, strategy and stuff.
Reggie Theus for Calvin Natt posted up.
Never. So, man, he's one of those players, like, when he was on the Spurs, I started watching, like, I remember the very first basketball game I ever remember watching was, like, an NBA Finals game between the Suns and the Bulls. Like, that's when I started, and then I went back later to, like, watch other stuff in the 80s, but I wasn't paying it. Yeah, I wasn't paying attention before that, so, like, I don't even know who Calvin Natt is. He went to Northeast Louisiana. Like, I don't know what his, you know, actual career trajectory was, but then like you see someone like this who's like amazing.
At least he's not Curtis Borchardt.
Yeah, you're trying to see what his. Oh, he did. So Calvin Natt did like have a 20. It was for the Nuggets in the 80s. That doesn't count. 23 points per game for the Nuggets in the 80s does not count.
Everybody scored 20 for the Nuggets in the 80s. It's kind of what I mentioned, I think, on one of my pods is. In this era, every team is going to have a 20 point per game score for the most part. You know, obviously I know, the Blazers really haven't had a 20 point per game score, but that's because of the way I run my team where I'm trying to run nine guys. And so there's just not enough minutes, but if I gave my team the normal allotment of minutes, we'd probably have one or two 20 point scorers, but everybody can be a 20 point scorer.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, and then, it's kind of a bad thing when you get someone in who you think is like That was that my thing with like the Walter Davis trade. Was like, all right, I'm going to bring him in. I think after like two sims, he was averaging 18 a game. I'm like, okay, something really went wrong here. It's like, that's the whole, like, everyone is supposed to be able to score it with this pace.
Yeah, everyone can score with this pace. And the other thing, going back to league-wide trends for a moment, that I have noticed is most players are not very good defenders.
They're not. They're really not. And that's kind of the thing that's when you're trying to build your team. Like, there's like a couple of players who are good defenders and like capital G, capital D, to the point where like you have them and you're fine anywhere else. But there's just not enough of those. And I don't think there's enough of people who are good enough. Like, man, when I was drafting and I ended up drafting Blackman, I was looking at him like, I mean, this guy's never gonna be a good defender. Like, but if his ceiling is like a 50 in perimeter defense, that'll be a blessing, you know?
Yeah.
And like,
look around the league, that's average for a all-star point guard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a point guard. Point guards are actually pretty good, but shooting guard or small forward.
Yeah, exactly. It's very interesting, but like the teams that are good defensively, I think usually it's scheme heavy or probably rebounding heavy. You know, like the teams that are really good rebounding are also tend to be good defensively, and I think that goes hand in hand. There are a decent amount of centers who have that like locked up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have one of those, you probably don't need that much more to get to a good defense. I think the problem is if you don't have that, then you're kind of screwed from the get-go. It doesn't matter how good your point guard is at defending the point of attack.
Yeah, I'm curious to see, especially following this pod, when we talk about it, what the trend becomes in terms of training for defense. Yeah, because you figure if you draft a guy at 22 and you give him, you know, two or three potential trainings in defense, now he's got an A rating. And there aren't very many of those out there.
Mm-hmm.
They have to wait probably four more seasons for him to get there. Maybe you put some more points into getting in there. But yeah, I think training is a little bit underutilized.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think, you know, points are so scarce and the luxury tax gets so scary so quickly. People are worried about luxury tax. And also, going back to your point about young players coming in and making an impact, I'm looking at my team this season. I'm like, there are probably seven guys I need to get TC insurance on.
Yeah, yeah.
That's expensive. I don't know. I'm going to have some of them twist in the wind probably. And, you know, I did that last season, and, you know, some of them took hits. Yeah, mm-hmm. In fact, I think last season I insured six guys, and the one guy I didn't insure got hit.
That's how – like, I'm at that point now where, like, I have to insure my guys. And then, mm-hmm. like, you know, I drafted Otis Thorpe. And if I want – I can't just cross my fingers and be like, well – I'm not going to insure him because then it's literally a waste of a draft pick. It wouldn't have made any sense. Like, because if especially yellow green guys, right? Yellow green guys who get hit in training camp in the rookie year and they're just yellow, they're essentially dead. There's no coming back. There's no reason to even like their value is completely gone. If they lose think about it this way. So like if Thorpe doesn't get insured, and he gets hit to the point where he loses his future potential and his B in a post defense goes down to a C. It's like, it separates him from being a starter or a potential starter with some points put into him or with a good camp or two to like a guy who is just a minimum contract. And then you feel bad for spending your 11th pick on a minimum contract.
Yeah. And I think that maybe I look at things a little bit differently because normally my draft picks are bought with points in the 20s. So at that point, it's like, I mean, if he pops, cool. If not, But yeah, you're right. If you're using a lotto pick on a guy or a near lotto pick, you got to keep him going because
mm-hmm.
that's your influx of talent, because we can't all be easy and sign Kiki Vandeweghe.
No, yes. But if your plan is that you want to train someone up, their insurance has to be a part of it, and that's 10 more points or whatever.
It's an additional 15 points a season.
15 points, yeah.
And I think there may be a little bit of sunk cost fallacy there, where, you know, I think, oh, I put points into this guy, now I have to protect him. But if you were to, you know, to spin it out, and I'll use this example, you know, somebody you draft at, you know, 22 years old, and you throw 15 points at him. Well, if you're going to protect him for his 22, 23, 24, 25, 26 year old training camp, that's 90 points you have to commit to him. And is that worth throwing 90 points after you spent, you know, 10 points improving an attribute? That attribute increase was really 100 points. You know, and it's something I'm struggling with is, you know, are there guys that, you know, I'm pursuing a sunk cost fallacy with? And I think it's more, you know, at least for me, I'm more willing to let guys twist when they're on a rookie contract, because, yes, I spent a draft pick on them, but it's not going to cripple my cap. But for me, like, you know, I've got Bill Cartwright on a max. I have to protect him, because if he gets hit, my cap is screwed, and I'm going to have a hard time getting anything for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, yeah, I just brought in Theus back on a 5-year max. There's no way he cannot be insured. Yeah. He's got to be insured.
Yeah. You've got to at that point. And I think that's where I think it's going to be interesting watching people walk the line the next couple of seasons, until all the people from the creation draft age out of needing TC insurance, is, you know, how many guys can you afford? You know, I joked in the Discord rather, you know, can't wait to see what's going to be bigger, the Lakers luxury tax bill or the Spurs TC insurance bill.
I know. And Carlos was like, no big deal, I got the points. And yes, you do.
For this season.
But you're going to have to keep doing it.
I'm looking at, you know, Mark West, Eddie Johnson, Mark Aguirre, Kiki Vandeweghe, Michael Jordan, Byron Scott, Isaiah Thomas. Yes, Kiki's 26, but he's got two camps. So I'll just count the total. 2, 5, 10. That's going to be another 4, so 14, 7, 21, and then 5, 31. So that's 31 TC. That's 465 points.
Yeah, that's
your team from dissolving. That is enormous.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's a lot of articles. That's a lot of – you know, that's not just
a cap of 25 per season, yeah. Over seven seasons, you can only come up with about half of that.
Yeah.
Maybe no, a third of that.
Yeah. 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 No, it's
people are going to have to make hard decisions sooner rather than later. Not this season, I don't think, but I think next season people are going to start feeling the luxury tax pinch.
Mm-hmm.
And then the season after that, people are going to start feeling the TC pinch.
Yeah, it was very interesting because, this is all happening at the same time, whereas, like, going into UFA, there were two teams that didn't have a max, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is not going to be the case over the next 3 or 4 seasons, where 21 of 23 teams are just, like, flush with cash. Like, that cash is going away, and as these really talented players are coming off their rookie deals, like... we're in a really weird spot, and you're right. The tax is going to go up, the cost of insurance, like the point premium is going to be insane. Like the value of points, because we jokingly say, oh yeah, just throw 15 points for that player or whatever. Like,
yeah, everything's made up and the points don't matter.
Yeah. But the points definitely matter. The
points will matter. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why it's been so good to have not overrated Reggie Theus, who is responsible for 9 points on his own. For me, who don't even make the playoffs, but I still had so many points last year because Reggie Theus just kept accumulating points. So,
yeah, well, you know, it's a good problem to have, right? Too many points and not enough things to spend them on. That won't last forever.
No, exactly.
I mean, I already see the Lakers, casting about for, you know, hey, you know, who wants our players? And, you know, I know they've been looking, and I've said this publicly on the pod, everybody knows they've been looking for a power forward for like three seasons now.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. To your point earlier, A, welcome to the club, but B, you know, you were trying to move these guys before when they were making 475.
And
now
they're
making 1.1, 1.2, 1.3 million. They've become infinitely harder to move.
Yeah. The issue is, and I'm, it's not the exact same thing that I went through. When I brought back,
I'm using Blake as an example.
No. But it's something that
on Lazy Titan Smash here.
Yeah.
Just for full disclosure.
Yeah, but that there's it's the same situation that people are finding, and I did
just
similar
the first one in this situation.
Yeah.
There will be other teams in this situation over the next couple of years.
Yeah, but I did a similar thing, bring back Greg Ballard and James Edwards, right? Like they're good players. They probably, I mean, in this world, like you need to pay money to keep them. But you need to pay money to keep them, and the idea is you want to get something for them rather than lose them for nothing. So the if you're not don't want to lose them for nothing, you got to keep them around. But then once you do that, then like the trade value is different. Not only because like it is harder to trade them to match salary, but then people say, well, that person is making more money than they're worth, and then value changes accordingly. So it's a tough thing, but I think I will say it's probably infinitely worse to lose all of those players in free agency and have to do something else than that. Like at least there are talented players currently on the Lakers team and currently on the Clippers team, rather than not having like anything and then not knowing what to do.
I think, and this is maybe based on my recent experience, last season I lost Dan Brownfield in free agency.
Mm-hmm.
And I was prepared to let him go. You know, I had a number, and I offered him that number, and I knew full well there were probably four or five teams that were going to offer him a max.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, if people offer him a max, I have to let him go. And part of that was, you know, I watched my team record before I brought him in and after I brought him in, and the needle just moved a tiny bit. Like mm-hmm. I was winning about 65% of games before and 67% of games after. That's not max money.
No.
2% is not max money. And I think, you know, going into this UFA period, and I'm not going to have this luxury in other seasons, well, maybe, but you know, I went in with all of my key players already signed. So I didn't, you know, I deliberately moved off of the first round creation draft stars so that I wouldn't have to worry this year when everybody had space. Oh my gosh, people are coming for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I've already kind of developed a little bit of a sense of, you know, I know what my plan is, I know where people fit, and I have a slot at which I'm willing to pay. And if somebody pays more and they walk, I have something that's 80% as good lined up to replace them in a salary slot I can live with. And for a lot of people, 80% is good isn't what they want. And I think that's where the hard decisions come in is, you know, people don't want to lose something for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the real NBA, look at what happened to the Knicks when they traded Patrick Ewing to the Sonics. They should have just let him walk.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's
sometimes you just have to say, you know what? I'm better off of well, heck, in recent memory, look at the Clippers and Paul George last year. Everybody thought the Clippers are doomed for losing Paul George, and it's actually the 76ers that are doomed for signing him.
That was a very good move for the Clippers.
Sometimes the best signings are the ones you don't make.
Yeah, well, you know, full disclosure, the bids that I made last year were me talking to Chad. Last season, I was at a beach. I was like unavailable. I was like, "Hey, Chad, I want to make some bids. Can you help me with these?" And he put in my bid. So really, he's the reason that my team is in the situation it is. And I'll either forgive him or praise him, depending on how the next couple of years go.
You know, if you win, he's going to take credit for your title.
It's true. Well, that's what we've always done. I remember, so Scott was the Lakers, and Scott stepped down, and then Inner took over the Lakers.
Yeah.
And won a title, and everyone was like, that wasn't your title. And then Inner built the Knicks, then stepped down, and Varga came in and won a title with the Knicks, and everyone's like, that's not your title. So, like, there's always going to be
that ribbing. It's the same thing with, you know, the bubble asterisk title, or Alex Gruslow, I finally got a real one, you know. Nobody ever wants to give credit to anybody else.
No, every ring. Well, if you even pay attention to the NBA, like, every ring, it's like, oh man, you were lucky because you didn't have to face this. Like, everyone's like, the Nuggets were like, man, that was the easiest path to a ring. The Warriors, that was the easiest path to a ring. The Celtics, that was the easiest path.
You even go back, you know, to the 80s, and, you know, I remember people, you know, saying, you know, the Celtics in 86, well, they were lucky because the Rockets knocked out the Lakers, so they didn't have to play Showtime. And then in 87, the Lakers were lucky because Bird's back went out. And in 88, the Lakers were lucky because Isaiah got injured. And in 89, the Pistons were lucky because Scott and Magic got injured. And in 90, it's like, can we stop already? Injuries are just a part of it.
Yes,
you
know? Exactly.
And the path you take, the matchups you get, are the matchups you get. You can only play what's put in front of you.
Yeah. But yeah, it's mostly because we're all haters.
Yeah, we are.
We're all haters.
My title is legitimate. Your title has an asterisk.
Exactly. Now, you know what a legitimate title was? The Nets, the first title. That was a legitimate title. Good. I'm sorry. I know that's painful. I know.
Through me to get that title.
Yeah, they sure did.
But, no, it's all good. I was enjoying watching them tear through the East right up to the point where I had to face them.
Yeah. It was such a fun. That was such a funny team. Like, and I was so happy for Ed too. It was like, it was a great, but like,
a very idiosyncratic team. But
yeah, the team did, because like, I will say this: like, the last 2-3 seasons have definitely made more sense to me going forward. I'm like, okay, yeah, I know what we're expecting. You know, this reminds me a lot of how the league was earlier, but that very first year.
No one knows anything.
And then an Ed's team, which I don't think had a single current blue. Like,
I think Daryl Dawkins was blue.
I think he may have been green blue. I actually don't think he was.
Yeah, let's go look it up. It's in the archives.
And but like, I think they had probably the best defensive team in the league, and then that just carried them. They got hot at the right time. But like, it was just so it's just so random. Like, it felt like different, but like, you know,
it was a green blue.
There you go. But you know, no one knew what to expect, but it was a great title, and I'm very happy that Ed got it.
Yeah, no, it's good. Were there any, you know, we talked a little bit about the Kiki Vandeweghe signing in free agency. Was there any other free agency signing that stood out as, oh my gosh, I can't believe this happened?
I was trying to figure it out. Like, I was looking, there wasn't that much to me. Like, cause everyone else, like most people brought in, like re-signed their guys. The Michael Cooper signing was, significant. Significant in the fact that it was
the Bucks,
right? It a good player who used to play Milwaukee doesn't play in Milwaukee anymore.
Yeah.
Now, Cooper is one of those players I was saying before, of like, that's the kind of player that you can have on your team who's like such a good defensive presence that, like, especially in your backcourt, like, or even like as a, you know, you slot him in either the two or the three. It's like, you don't have to worry about a lot of defense other than that. And so like, that's a nice signing to have. I mean, Doug is going to be fine without, you know.
Yeah, the only other big signing I thought, you know, jumped out at me and surprised me was the Jack Sikma to the Mavericks signing. because I thought that was a nice signing by the Mavericks to put next to Sam Bowie and Bill Laimbeer, because now they actually have a three-man big rotation where the bigs do what bigs are supposed to do.
Yeah, it will require a different game plan, I think, and I don't know how well everything else falls into place, but I will say this, like the game plan that they could use, the rest of the team, it could work, but like yeah. they can't be like a crazy fast paced team.
No, with that big man rotation. A season or two ago, they were the all offense, no defense team. I think now they have some rim protection. You know, I don't think Jack Sikma helps so much with the rim protection per se, but I think what he does do is he gives them rebounding when either Bowie or Laimbeer needs to take a rest.
Yeah, that is a good that it's an important thing to have. That is nice, and it is a good signing. Another case where like. I don't know how hard, because that was on the Bullets, right?
That was where was it? I think Sikma. Where was Sikma before? Well, I'll just look at his player page and find out.
I thought he was on the Bullets. No, he was on. I was wrong. He was on
Sixers.
Yeah. So never mind. I was gonna say like the Bullets will be fine without him, but they will be fine.
They were fine without him because they were already without him.
They were already fine without him.
I think the Bullets made a kind of underrated pickup in Marcus Johnson too.
Yeah, I mean, I've been impressed with the Bullets. I think like team wise and
yeah, the Bullets are generally I mentioned on my podcast. I usually like the Pacers draft picks and their free agent signings. The Bullets seem to be one team that if I don't sign a guy, he usually goes to the Bullets and it frustrates me. Stop that.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how this team looks. I really like Larry. Everyone likes Larry Nance. I'm not special. Everyone likes Larry Nance. He's a really good player.
Speaking of trends, I need to see if I can get Buck Williams and Fred Roberts and their goggles away from him.
Oh yeah, I know. Listen, that's an important thing.
It's important. I want all the building. Goggles, guys.
I know. I was looking at my team at once that was revealed. I was like, do I have anybody with goggles? And I don't think I do.
If I could get Kareem and Hakeem and Fred Roberts and Buck Williams, I know most of those guys. Well, Kareem now is getting long in the tooth.
Yeah.
The problem is there weren't a lot of guards that wore goggles. It was always the big men.
No, it's true. It was always a big man thing. They were such inspirations to me growing up because, like, I had bad eyesight since I was second grade, and so when I started playing like bitty basketball, it was always like I had to wear these grotesque goggles on my face, and I remember being like self-conscious about it, and someone being like, "Watch Horace Grant, he's awesome," and like that was like the inspiration, right?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was I had switched to contacts at the end of elementary school, and so when I got to high school and I was playing basketball, I was playing it with contacts, and there was a game. You know, I was playing with my brothers in the front yard, and somebody threw a basketball and it caught me just at the wrong angle, like in my temple and my eye, and temporarily blinded me for about 6 hours.
Wow!
And I was like, at least in the one eye. And I was like, this is terrifying. This is never happening again. I went and got goggles the next day, and I was goggled ever after that. And, you know, I played power forward. Well, I played defensive specialist, I guess you could say, in high school. Usually I would start the game on the bench, and after 5 minutes, point guard all the way to center, my coach would say, stop him. And I would go in and I would do whatever I had to lock him down.
Yeah.
And most of my teammates called me Rambus. You can probably guess, you know, what the popular team in the area at the time was. But I think the other reason I was called Rambus is, you know, yes, I mentioned before, I did a lot of outthinking of people, but I also had zero regard for physical safety. Which in any given game usually meant three or four times a game, if the ball was going out of bounds, I was flying after it. And I didn't care where I landed, and usually I was knocking over cheerleaders like bowling pins.
Your player profile is very clear.
Yeah, Kurt Rambis was basically who I was. But
Well, then,
I thought it was funny because going into the season, my coach pulled me aside and said, "You're an analytical person. What does our team need?" And I said, "We're soft." And he's like, "Would you like to be the enforcer?" I'm like, "You're not going to miss my shooting. You're not going to miss, you might miss my defense, but sure, I'll be the enforcer."
Hell yeah.
And so I still remember laying a hard foul on. So there was one guy who was just running his mouth, running his mouth, running his mouth, and he had a breakaway layup. And because, again, I noticed these things, I noticed where the referees were. And I made sure to shield my left arm from the referees with my body. With my right arm, I went for the block. With the left arm, I shivered him off the edge of the floor into the wall. He left on a stretcher,
Oh,
which I
Jesus.
felt bad about.
Yeah.
But then his teammates, were going to the line to shoot free throws. One of them started talking while the refs were over at the scorer's table, and I said, "I have four more fouls. Which of you are leaving on stretchers?"
Oh, Jesus
And it
Christ.
got quiet. I'm like, this is what my coach wanted me to do, be the enforcer,
There, yeah.
Which was funny because, if you actually knew me, I was the one like helping the cheerleaders on the bus with their homework,
Yeah.
That
But
was
listen.
not my personality at all, but our team needed somebody to be an a-hole, and that was me.
When the goggles come on, there
When
you
the
go.
goggles came on, the personality came on too,
That's right.
yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why
So,
I have the blunt force trauma blazers now.
yeah, injuring everybody you come across. So, all right. So, obviously, most things are going to be unchanged despite, a little TC changes here or there going into the season. So, do you feel confident thinking who you of who you think are going to be the teams to watch in each conference?
I think so. I think I have a pretty good idea of who's going to wind up where, as it were. Mostly, some of them are a little harder to predict, and a lot of the trades, which we haven't talked a lot about, but this pod is already going long, so we're
Yeah.
not going to bother with that. I might mention one or two trades that I think were blockbusters. Again, and we touched on it, I thought the trading away of Moses Malone from Golden State, it takes them out of the running for the Pacific Division crown. It just does. I
Yeah.
know they're going to have a good team, but you can't trade away a guy who was probably second in the MVP voting every year and not have that hurt you. So I'm going to start with the Pacific because it's the division I'm most familiar with because I'm matching up against it all the time. And usually on these pods, I don't like to talk about myself a lot, but as I mentioned before, we came in second in the division by a whisker last season, and I basically brought back the whole team. So I think we're probably going to be good this season because nobody is over the age of 30, so we're not going to get worse. So I think we're in it. The Lakers pushed to the very end, and they're all young and getting better. The Lakers terrify me. I think the Lakers are the team to watch. I think Seattle will push because I liked a lot of their pickups in trades. Their UFA was fun, but last season they were good, and I thought they made some very judicious trades.
Yeah,
They
I
really
like the
they
Eaton trade. I like the
yeah.
Eaton trade.
So yeah, so I can see Seattle being right there. I think the Lakers win it, and I think Seattle and Portland are fighting for second. I think you're fourth. Phoenix is at the bottom. Golden State's still trying.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how I see the Pacific anyway.
No, I think that is, I think I pretty much agree with that, and I will go as far as to say I think that not maybe not the winner of the Pacific Division, but I think the person coming from the finals is going to be from the Pacific Division.
Yeah, I think so. I think the Kings took a gamble with moving off of King and trying to go, hard in free agency. I don't think they got what they wanted, and so I think they take a step back. The Jazz obviously got decimated with the loss of Vandeweghe. The Mavericks, Nuggets, and Rockets aren't there yet. The question for me is, did the Kings take a big enough step back, and do the Spurs take a big enough step up in training camp? Because they're all purple potential, but they're all pretty raw. I think the Kings could have another year before the Spurs catch them.
Yeah.
But if the Spurs have a good TC, they're going to be a behemoth.
I just don't I don't know if I'm just downplaying this in general. I don't think they're there yet because of team construction. They need something else.
Yeah, they don't have any bigs. That's what concerns me. The only reason I worry about the Kings, again, is, offloading Bernard King, swinging for a star and not coming up with one. But I also know Chad, and I will be shocked if 12-15 passes and he hasn't added another star.
Yeah.
So I think the Kings will be right there in the mix. So the question is really, can the Spurs grow fast enough to catch the Kings? But I don't think the rest of the division is going to win it.
Yeah. And breaking podcast news, he has actually officially offered me a trade. I'm not going to go into the discussion for it. But I texted him, should we do live negotiations? And he said, let's do it. But I'll go as far as to say that there is an offer. So he is trying to get better,
I expect nothing less.
Yeah, exactly. No, I've always, the Kings are good. If it's not the Kings or the Spurs, it's like, the Mavericks are probably the most talented team other than them too, but it's the same thing we talk about.
Yeah, I worry about fit there.
Yeah, the fit is. A good game plan could really change it. I don't know.
Yeah, for the Central, I think it's the Bucks again. I think the loss of Cooper makes them not as dominant, but they were just so head and shoulders above everybody else last season. Even taking a step back, they're probably still three steps ahead of everybody else. The Bulls, I liked their offseason. I think the Bulls could push them. I don't think they'll catch them, but I think they'll push them.
I think they'll make a nice little play. I think they can make a nice little playoff run. I think it's a well constructed team.
Yeah,
it's like,
I really like what Logan's doing there.
It's like every other team where it just has a glut of wings, but they also have talent at those other positions. Which is like what a lot of teams don't have, right? So the other teams have the wings that they need to move into those positions. They don't need to do that. They just have a very good wing rotation and the rest of the team is strong. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, for the Pacers, I think they're a Michael Cage training camp boost away from being competitive. Yeah. If that happens, look out for the Pacers. If it doesn't, and it probably won't, I think they're a fringe playoff team, but they're not going to challenge the Bucks and the Bulls. The Pistons, I think, again, there's holes in their roster. The Cavaliers have some holes. The Hawks, they're just not there yet. And then in the Atlantic, I think it's the Knicks and the Bullets. The Nets might have an outside chance. The Sixers have just slowly been corroding, and the Celtics blew their team up 2 years ago. They're not ready yet.
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing what the Knicks look like with Moses.
I think Moses makes a huge difference for the Knicks. I think there was a significant gap between the Bullets and the Knicks this past season. I think Moses closes that gap.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the Knicks are going to be the most interesting team to look at.
I would say that's probably fair. I think the Knicks are going to, I'll say there's three teams, if we had the equivalent of league pass, there are three teams I'd be watching. The Knicks are one because I want to see what Moses does in the Big Apple. The Spurs are two because I want to see how quickly they can gel. And to me, the Mavericks are three because they have the pieces, but can they put them together?
Yeah, I think I share two of those teams too, right? Those are two very obvious, I want to see how these teams go. One of my league pass teams would probably be the Hawks because I love Charles Barkley, but I just want to see, I want to see what that fit is. I want to see what, because they have a very interesting roster to me. And I want to see, how it plays out, where they stretch, where they put their players and how it fits. And I just want to see how Charles Barkley plays.
Yeah, I thought for them, the Clemens Johnson pickup was really huge because he's not an offensive force at center, but he is a defensive force.
Yeah, he's a very. I think he's an awesome player. I wanted him so bad. I was trying to do the throw money at him for him to sign before Reggie Theus signed, and unfortunately Reggie was just too eager to accept the Supermax.
Yeah, Clemens. I don't know. He's an interesting player in that I think a lot of the Blues in the league are offense driven, and he is just not.
No.
You know, he's all glue guy.
Yeah, and you need someone like that. Now, you need someone like that in addition to all the other talent, which is coming for the Hawks, but it's not quite there
and
yet.
I think, you know, Barkley will get there. I think right now Barkley, and this was kind of like with Drexler last year. You know, Drexler wasn't going to be the easy number one option. That was still going to be Lurie Orr. But, you know, Wilkes is going to be their number one. Kellogg and Eddie L. Johnson might be their two and three. If I was the Hawks, I might even consider throwing some training to get Barkley's inside game up to his potential faster just to make him take over. Because I want him taking my shots. I don't want those going to Eddie L. Johnson or, you know, anybody else. Although maybe Eddie comes off the bench and he starts Harper. See, his team just, it's so intriguing now that you mention it because, you know, Elo and Harper, they're super raw. They're like 3 years from being ready. But when they're ready, you know, Elo's BB in handle and passing. I think Harper is AB. So they'll have a very solid backcourt. And I don't think we've, you know, it's one of the things we see with a lot of the wings is they score the ball a lot, but they turn it over a lot. And that's a backcourt that won't turn it over. And what does that look like for the league when you've got a backcourt that doesn't turn it over?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
no, exactly. I think it's very intriguing. Like, there's still work to do. There's still holes to fill. But I really like what they're looking like. I'm very happy that Ryan is being like locking in. Because you know he's a good GM and he's a fun guy to have in the league.
Yeah, it's good to have him back. And I'm super anxious for expansion to get some of these other guys that we see hanging around on Discord back in too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't think I'll say this. Andy's never coming back. I don't think he's ever coming back. But Nick will, and that will be nice. You know, it'll be awesome. I am very glad that I came back. I'm glad that you came back. And this has been a fun few seasons despite me not having any success yet, because I'm having a good time.
That's the important thing, and that's what should keep you engaged is, you know, are you having a good time? And it's one of the things that I think for all of the talk about, you know, anti-tanking rules and people should always be trying to win, is that only one person wins each season.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, well, I guess you could, you know, finish a 25 and 57 season with a win, but, you know, generally everybody finishes the season with a loss except one team. And so if you aren't finding other goals to go after and things to keep you engaged, I mean, you know, Exist's little project has been hilarious to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're you need to find ways to have fun that don't always involve winning a championship. And if you do that, you'll be able to be in long term. If it's always, I have to win a championship every single season, it's a failure. And I know I do that in my press conferences, but it's more the shtick.
Yeah.
You know, I have other specific goals that I'm working on, and some of them are mostly for my own amusement. But you need to find something that will bring you joy that isn't necessarily winning, and whether that's following a certain player or whether that's doing a certain template, or maybe that's acquiring players where when you look on their team page, they're in alphabetical order because that pleases your OCD, you know, whatever it is, do that. And, you know, don't listen to everybody else complaining.
Yeah, you know what is a good point? I know we didn't talk about this on the podcast, but we talked about it beforehand. You know, I couldn't trade anything with Exist anyway. I don't have any white players. Just completely disqualified. I can't do it.
I will let Exist actually revealed to me what his long game was with this. It's absolutely hilarious, but I don't want to take the reveal away from him. The reveal when he puts it out there, I was dying.
Well, I'm very excited for that. That's
going
to
so
be good.
Exist, if you're listening, get that reveal out there, because I think once people see, oh, this is what he was doing and this is why, it's hilarious. It really is. I was like, man, I wish I thought of that. But he's right. It would only work in Utah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Only works in Utah.
Yeah, it was one thing I asked him with the Tom Chambers trade is, so I have three white players on my roster. Would any combination of them work for Chambers?
And he's like, yeah. Yeah, no, I was talking to him about it, and then I looked back at my roster and I'm like, oh, this isn't going to work. I can't give him what he wants, you know?
And then give him draft picks and let him pick white players.
Just like if you and I trade, like, I don't have any goggle players. I don't know what, I can't help you.
I'm not really going for goggles. I'm going for something else, but the goggle thing is funny.
Although I was like, wait, did Otis Thorpe? No, Otis Thorpe didn't wear glasses. Goggles.
Did he? Now I'm curious.
I don't think so.
I'll count face masks if they ever broke their nose.
No, when I did Otis Thorpe goggles, it showed Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Oh, maybe I can make an AI version of Otis Thorpe wearing goggles.
There you go.
Well, we're coming up on 2 hours in for, it's probably not the full podcast length because we had some chat before and during breaks, but I think at this point we're probably maxed out on points, so we can wrap it up and maybe get together again and do it in the future. And I'll put out there, anybody else that wants to be on Chat with a Cat, hit me up. It's always more fun to talk to people than talk at myself because I get sick of listening to myself. I don't know how all you guys do it.
Well, listen, you know, we all want to hear you talk about us. So we're just waiting for that. No, this has been awesome. I'm really glad I did it. This is exactly why I got back in the league, was to do this kind of stuff. So,
all right. So with that, we will wrap things up. And I would assume the next episode of Chat with a Cat is probably going to come in right after the first couple sims of the season. So I'll actually have results to talk about rather than speculation. And everyone, hang on to your butts in TC. Sorry.
I'll say
sorry
a prayer
in advance to all the death and havoc that has wreaked on the league. And easy, please don't get boosted on all your non-purples.
He's gonna lose something. Well, if he doesn't,
worse, he's gonna lose points.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of Chat with a Cat. We will see everybody next time.
All right. Bye.